good evening. Good evening, this is L.A. Steele, and tonight we got a special guest for you. His name is Donald. He's the Donald Hugh Whitehead Jr., the American director of the National Coalition for the Homeless. We will be calling him just now. Dan has been an advocate and an activist for well over 20 years. And we're going to be talking about his story here in his new book. And let's move on. We're going to call him right now. He's waiting for us.
This is Donald.
Hey, Donald. This is Leo. Leo, L.A. Steele Show. How are you?
Doing just fine.
Yeah, I'm glad we're talking tonight. I was wondering how you're. I read your bio and I read the information your publicist sent. But how are you doing? And what are you doing at this point? It sounds like you're a pretty busy guy.
I am doing my ministry, which is working on homeless issues, working to end homelessness in America, but doing well physically, mentally.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, you're calling us a ministry. These are your ministries, or you have more than one?
No, I'm saying that homelessness is what I consider a ministry is. I don't consider
yeah.
this a job. I consider it a ministry.
I interviewed on my television show a Hartford Catholic workers, and they were working with the homeless, inviting them to their home and taking care of them. Are you familiar with their work as well?
Now, who was that again? Yes. Oh, yes. Yes. I was affiliated in Cincinnati with the Catholic Workers House in Cincinnati and also in several different places across the country, actually.
Were you familiar with, you ever hear of Ned Cole? He was a poverty worker here in Connecticut, the Revitalization Corps in Hartford, Connecticut. He's had it for years.
No, I've never heard of him.
He was one of the original founders of Habitat for Humanity with Jimmy Carter, and that was back years ago. But yeah, he was quite a reformer and activist his whole life. But as far as you know, you didn't know him or know of him somewhere. But anyway, it's a long story. So, what is right now? Your coalition, you know, the National Coalition for the Homeless. How big and broad is that, and what is it doing at this point for so many homeless?
So NCH is the oldest advocacy group that works on homeless issues in America. So we work on four areas, policy, we work on communication to the homeless, we do some technical assistance, and we do some grassroots organizing. We also do some direct service. We have a speakers bureau that homeless people are able to get income through. We also do some technical assistance, and we hire homeless people to do that. We've been working closely with the federal government to advise them on policy issues that relate to homelessness. We worked on coronavirus logistics and vaccines and also distribution. We actually distributed about 1.5 million masks for homeless people. And it's a nationwide coalition. We are in all 50 states.
Wow.
And territories, and we do all we can to address the issue in a structural.
Yeah, right. No, I can understand that. You're the director of the organization. What basically are your functions? And you said it's in all 50 states, so you're kind of overseeing all 50 states
Well, we have members in all 50 states, and we do more. We're in more of an advisory role than we are kind of an oversight role. So as executive director, I'm charged with making sure that we create strategic alliances to address homelessness. I'm also in charge of the fundraising and in charge of the overall operations. I have a policy person. I have a grassroots organizing person. I have a communication person, and it's my job to make sure all of those things work in collaboration. We also advise, speak, assist coalitions all across the country on how to address homelessness.
No, that's fascinating. How do you? How many people are volunteers and active? You know, the people. How many people are involved with that particular coalition? Do you have a number?
So there's tons. I don't know what that exact number would be, but. You know, literally tens of thousands of people, if we think about the entire country. Mm. We also partner with organizations. For instance, we partner with the Ford Fund to distribute those masks. We have a partnership with Progressive Insurance. We have a partnership with Warner Media and have had – we right now have public service announcements running with Melissa McCarthy actually talking about helping our organization. So we have a number of partnerships. Those are just a few. And then we partner with other agencies. One of our board members is a member of NOW. We kind of are all over the place.
Forgive my ignorance on that one, but NOW is what?
National Organization of Women. Yes.
Okay. Yeah, I thought it was right. I didn't know. I wasn't sure if it was National Organization of Workers or National Organization of Whatever, but in the women. Yeah. I'm sorry. I'd kind of skipped my memory there. So, are you dealing? How large is that organization? I mean, that organization.
Oh, it's very, very big.
It's one
of the
biggest. I thought so.
Yes.
I don't know their
exact numbers, but I know they are nationwide and they do some great work, and we're really thrilled to have them as partners.
Well, I'll tell you, I have been so excited as a progressive, I guess I'd call it. I was progressive before they knew what that was, but I've been at this over 20, like you, I've been at it over 20 years, but you know, television, radio, documentaries, all that stuff. But I, this has been an area that has baffled me because it bothers me because I live in a very very wealthy area in Connecticut and I was more of a transplant here than I was a guy with a lot of money, but I just was a guy that made a lot of noise on radio and you know, lectures and so on. This is an important area to me that I think has been very, I was thinking, what would I be able to do to organize a fundraiser for your organization in this area? This is Northwest Connecticut. I live in a town, which is, extremely crazy town, mass immigration of New Yorkers have come up here and bought out the area and driving the little guy making it almost impossible for, you know, for people to afford the rents up here and stuff, you know. I happen to own up here, but affordable housing has become a big issue in this area. And not that we haven't many homeless, but I don't think we do have any, actually, that I'm aware of here. But we do, I mean, other areas do, other towns surrounding us do. Torrington, Connecticut, upstate New York. But I would like to find out how to organize with you a fundraiser. You know, I think we could do very, very well in this area.
I would love to do that.
Would you? Let me give you my email as well.
Let me grab something to write with. I'm actually quarantined in my basement.
I'll tell you what, Don. I have your email. I'll send you that and the following details and all that, and figure out what we could do. I was thinking we could possibly do a fundraiser around here, probably in June, July.
Okay.
Would that work for you or no?
Oh, absolutely. No, absolutely, it will work.
Would it? Okay. Because I'd be working. I try to develop it with a coalition. I have a bank that's sponsored my work. That's done a lot of receptions, and I'm an artist as well, and I do a lot of artwork, but they might be open to a large outdoor reception for invitation only, as a fundraiser, but that's a bank with their deposit, you know, with their main depositors and other people in the area, and we might work with that, and I could ask my friend there. She's also, oddly enough, the chairman of the Martha Graham dance group, and chairman of the board there, and she's quite influential in the New York areas. So I think we could do something there that might be a remarkable fundraiser. There's a lot of very influential, not so much people, you all, you know, but more so groups, you know, like the Taconic Foundation up here, which is a major, huge charity organization. They fund all kinds. They fund a lot of things, but there's so many different smaller groups as well. An activist group, the Democratic Party up here, is very strong, and I could probably coordinate with all of these people because they're all, I know them all quite well. And develop a sizable format for you to, and of course, if you could come and speak, it would be, you know, that would be a wonderful
thing.
Yes,
I've actually spoken in that area.
Yeah, you're in New York.
We're in DC. We're in DC, but I'd be happy to come up. I've actually spoken in Greenwich
in previous years
before pre-print pandemic, and I'll go wherever there is a willingness to hear our message.
Oh yeah, in fact, there is what I was thinking of in July. It would be great because there's a tremendous time for a lot of people come up here in that time up here. In the summer we have lakes and, you know, trees, and it's a beautiful area. I'd love to invite you up here to see it, but
I did my time in the Navy in Groton.
Yeah, spring, summer, and fall up. But Groton next to, forget Groton, next to Groton.
This area is
the jewel of the, I mean, as far as the scenery goes, as far as the mountains, the Berkshire Hills, in fact, I'll tell you what, if you look at my website, go to my art and photography of LA Steel .org. You just Google up art and photography of LA Steel, and it'll come to my site. But you'll see a lot of the I post a lot of the landscape up there, you know, a lot of the fall, especially fall and spring things. So, I have a set, there's a spot on there that actually, a page for the northwest corner and the Salisbury itself, promoting the town and the people up there. But it's, I think that you would be very, very well accepted up here. Not accepted is not the word. I think the response to your message would go over very well. And I think there's a lot of philanthropists up here that would be interested in donating, you know what I mean?
I might be able to put that together.
I could get this bank, which I'm very friendly with the depositor there, but they would like to, she would like to do something. And we had a wonderful reception in September for my showcasing my exhibit, my art, or my prints in this area. The reason I'm mentioning it to you is because when Eileen called me and told me about you, I said, man, this would be a great time to advocate this, especially now and today, you know. And there's a big concern for affordable housing in this area, and a lot of people are pushing for it. This would be a good opportunity to talk about it and to, fundraise for it. You'd be up to that?
Oh, I would absolutely be up to it.
Because I would be. Let me email you the statistics and tell you a little more about it. And I'll get my I'll get some people involved with it. And we're involved with the affordable housing, and people involved with the bank. And see what we can put together, if that would be all right with you.
I think it would be all right. I love the idea. Just let me know what I need to do, and we'll get together to make that happen.
No, I just wanted to say if you were something like that. The other thing I wanted to ask you, and I don't know why I thought of this, because, I guess you're in the circles there, but have you ever met AOC?
I've met her staff. I've never met her staff. I haven't met her first. Well, because I just started the job back in August, and of course the pandemic. Normally I would probably have met upwards of half of Congress by now, we've definitely had our staff have actually been in contact. Yeah, COVID has cut down. They won't do face-to-face visits.
Yeah, I don't blame. I can understand that, but I just thought you might know her, but I think they are the squad, but I think that progressive movement has finally taken hold, and I think the Republicans are on their last legs right now, and if they I think if he does away with the filibuster, they're cooked, you know, and not only cooked, but that HR1, I believe, or HR that new voting rights act, he's trying to push through.
Yes,
that one will destroy that party. Even McConnell came out and said, if we put this through, it'll destroy the party. It will.
Well, it needs to be destroyed.
They're cannibalizing themselves, eating their own people.
And their positions are so contrary to the rest of America. They seem to be completely out of touch.
What frightened me when I found it, there's not one Republican voted for the stimulus package.
That's just not smart.
Now, what does that tell their constituents? You know, this is the biggest.
Seventy percent of the country favors it. It means that you're really out of touch.
Oh, they got to be crazy. I mean, not to favor this. I think he's got a press conference tonight at 8 o'clock, and we'll try to tune into that tonight. Biden's going to have a press conference, his first one, I guess. So how do you feel about him? How do you feel about him?
I am a fan. I'm a fan not just because he's a Democrat. I believe that he has made some inroads on homelessness and other issues that I really, really care about. He's talked about them. He talks about them in the campaign. And it seems like he's following through with what he said. I actually worked on his campaign. So I worked on the homeless policy. And have really been a fan of the people that he brought to the table, and have already met with the Secretary of HUD and the Director of the Interagency Council on Homelessness. So I'm very happy to hear, you know, some of their thoughts and directions. And I think it's a direct result of the man himself. And I'm really impressed so far. Certainly keep an open mind, and we'll see what happens down the road.
Yeah. No, I think Eileen had mentioned that you had met Joe Biden.
I've met Joe years ago. I haven't had a meeting with him lately, but I actually have worked on his. I did work on his campaign, and what she probably was talking about is I did meet with the new HUD secretary last week.
Oh, you did, and
a couple of days after she was confirmed.
Yeah, what's her name?
Her name is Marsha Fudge, Marsha Fudge is the name. She's from Cleveland.
There was a Hispanic guy who was just annoyed. I thought it was the HUD, but
probably Montoya. Xavier Becerra, or are you talking Becerra at HHS?
What was he now? I forgot.
Department of Health and Human Services.
That was it. Yeah. Okay. And we got a guy, the education secretary there, was from our state. We're quite happy with that. But that he seemed to have made a lot of good. I'm pleased with many of his appointments. Not all of them, but most of them.
Yes.
He has.
I
was grateful that I was glad that he put up Merrick Garland. I'm very happy about that.
Yes.
And that he got through.
Yes.
What do you think so?
I absolutely think Merrick Garland is a tremendous choice as Attorney General. I almost am happy that he didn't get the Supreme Court nomination, because he wouldn't have been available to be the Attorney General. But there's a lot of damage that was done.
Do you think he's going to be a real bear in there, or what do you think? I'm hoping.
I think
he
is. I think he's going to be.
Yeah.
I think he's going to really follow the law, and as he said, he's going to be America's lawyer. And there is a lot of damage that needs to be repaired.
Oh God! Yeah.
In most of the federal agencies, but certainly at
even in a post office for crying out loud, he even managed to screw that all up.
Yeah.
It's
hard
it
to mess up a post office.
He's destroying it. Yeah.
And it was intentional, is the other thing.
Oh, sure it was. Absolutely. He wanted to screw up all the elections. What do you see? I know the stimulus package is going to help a lot of people. Was there a lot? I don't know if there was a large segment of that package that was going to the homeless.
There's $25 billion for housing, and then there's an additional $5 billion for homelessness specifically, and both of those will be critically important And I think what it will do for the most part, the biggest thing that it will do is it will get people off the streets. And those who have been staying in hotels because of COVID, some of the communities can actually buy those hotels. The $1,400 will help people prevent eviction, along with, you know, the unemployment, all of those things together. And then there are some benefits through Medicaid. There's some increased funding for federally qualified health centers. There's also some addiction dollars in there, so there's quite a bit.
Yeah, there's also a subsidy for insurance in there. The Obama Obamacare,
There's also burial dollars that people can be reimbursed if they lost loved ones due to COVID, and that definitely, you know, the people who were most impacted were poor people.
Yeah, imagine there. What is it now? 538,000 funerals. Amazing. But I just hope that I just hope. What do you think we'll see an end to this this COVID thing? Or what do you see as far as
So I've had the opportunity to work on the coronavirus relief teams around vaccinations. And I think that because of the level of vaccinations that we have, there's a very good chance that we start to normalize around, I would say, early winter. The third, I would say the fourth quarter of this year is when we really start to become normalized. Now, there's a couple of but there are a couple of really important things that could change that dramatically. And one is all these states that have started to open up, like Florida and Texas. You know, those people have to go back to their communities, and depending on, you know, what happens after that, it could be extended into the first quarter of next year, but hopefully hopefully.
What is your have you got a take on what happened in Texas there, and how many homeless there are down there now due to that storm and the ruining of their homes and the ice storm there, and a lot of homeless people down there now, aren't there?
Oh, horrible. It was horrible, and it was a complete mismanagement.
People were freezing to death in their cars, and it was horrible.
Yeah, a complete mismanagement.
Yeah.
Well, you know, the state, the governor down there, just a complete lapse of judgment and mismanagement, and then he actually doubled down on that. Opening up the state before, you know, we saw the real relief necessary for COVID. And that could have implications that they put the entire country in danger. So,
well, ever since that mess down there, our gas prices have gone up over 50 cents a gallon around here. Up to almost $3 a gallon. You know, I don't know about you.
Yes, they're a dollar more than they were at this time last year.
Just about, I remember they were about $1.19, $1.29 or so back then around here a year ago. And now they're, they're over a dollar more, more than a dollar, almost $2 more. But anyway, I hope that will come down. They claimed it wasn't the Biden, Biden wasn't responsible for the gas increase.
Oh, no, not at all.
Yeah, no, it wasn't him. There's shortages and supply problems and refineries getting flooded out or frozen out or whatever. That's pretty sad. In your position, I noticed that I read your bio and stuff, and I wanted to promote your book a little bit. When you said it was letters to the people that, you know, saved your life, basically. How does that, maybe you can elaborate on that a little bit and explain it to my listeners.
Sure. So the book is, you know, I talk about some of the moments in my life that were most impactful, both negative and positive, and what I do in the book is reach back to the people that were in my life at the time, and some are not with us anymore. And I write, you know, my feelings about the situations that I was in, or the help that they gave me during that time. You know, homelessness is not a lot of people get through it by themselves, and I want to talk about the community that's involved in helping people, and that's where the idea of the letters to those that love me when I couldn't love myself.
There you go. It's obvious to me that reading what you've accomplished, somehow you found your soul center. You know what I mean? As to what your gift was, yeah. That's a great discovery.
It is,
and it really is. You know, regardless of, you know, if you're making any money or if you're successful at whatever else you're not successful at, at least you're successful at so many things. You know what I mean? It's like,
exactly.
I noticed too that I was impressed that you not only were you in movies, did a number of movies, but you also did a number. You're also a stand-up comedian. And you still do that, or
not as much? I'm doing a number of things, and I don't have time for kind of the entertainment aspects of what I do.
Right.
So I haven't done a movie in about 5 years, and you know, a lot were independent films or and commercials.
Yeah.
I did a ton of commercials. And as far as stand-up comedy, I guess it's been about 3 years. Really, I was doing it up until COVID hit, and then, it's starting to reemerge, but I'm not, I don't have the fire in my belly to do it anymore. And part of it COVID, and then, you know, there is so much that needs to be done around ending homelessness, really hard to, you know, there's only so many hours in a day. And so I've decided to devote the hours to homelessness. You know, 5 to 10 years from now, one of the great things about acting and stand-up comedy, there's no age limit on it. So once I end homelessness, I can go back to doing some of the things I did entertainment-wise. I love acting and I love comedy, but, you know, everything has its season, I believe. And this season is the season to end homelessness.
I think for me personally, and from what I'm seeing, I think we're getting to the point where this year, as we break free, you know, of this COVID thing, I think we're going to see some major changes in everything we do. You know, everything we do. I've had 3 birthday parties this year already on Zoom, and you know, I got my own coming up in May where my family will join me on Zoom. Yeah, have you had a Zoom party yet?
I had. My family has been doing kind of Zoom events for every holiday, because we are pretty close knit family, and we're usually together during those times. And Zoom isn't together, but it's a lot closer than a phone call usually.
Yeah, it is actually, isn't it? But no, we had fun. I hadn't seen my brothers out in Idaho, my sisters in New York, and cousins, and it was kind of fun. But anyway, those are the areas that are changing our lives. And one of the biggest problems, one of the greatest problems that I see is the access to the internet, the access to remote learning, the access to that in this country. Everybody thinks, oh, we're all in it, we're all connected. Yeah, but cripes, when you realize that a third of this country, people in the country, don't have internet service. You know, they're rural areas or, you know, urban. And we're finding that
it's going to be a major problem.
It is. It is, because my girlfriend is she's a teacher and a school counselor, and she's done a lot of remote learning, remote teaching this year, and it's bad. It's a bad thing because kids are not responding and whatnot. But the people that don't have the internet, you know, they're even worse off because they can't have assignments, things like that. The schools provide them with it, but if their service is terrible in their area, you know what I mean? It's like
or if the rest of their family needs it. You know, some families, you know, they may have the service, but they don't have the bandwidth. I think what we'll see from the kids is the ramifications of, you know, children, their learning being delayed for this period of time, and especially those that have no access. Yeah, we'll see some real long-term negative effects from that.
I think so, and that'll lead to more homelessness, you know.
It will.
Problem.
And just think about
that's
the homeless children
right.
that are in shelters. There's not much internet availability there, so I don't know how they're learning.
Well, we find what they're doing it appears is they're giving them workbooks, you know, like, you know, printed work, you know, and they work with them and pass them out. But it's pretty much the parents have to teach them, or, you know, because they're not, you know, instruct them, and the teachers kind of give them the instructions and then hope that it's done. But it's very, very, very problematic. And
you got to hope that the parents got to hope the parents can teach them.
Yeah. But, you know, I can understand the striking, the teacher strikes as well. I mean, give us the damn vaccine and we'll go to school.
Exactly.
You know? Like, if I cry out loud, you know. And forget the face shield. Give me the damn vaccine. You know. But, you know, they're just about, now they're doing it, but it took them months to get it into their arms. But it's... I just don't know, Don. I just can't see. You see the whole nation as and how many people there are in the desperation, but I see pockets. I see different pockets, and they're not really visible during the daytime. You know what I mean? Like they are in California, different areas where you get these tent cities everywhere. But in Connecticut, I've always wanted to do a documentary. Because I've done a number of them on the state issues. But I always wanted to do one on poverty in Connecticut, you know, because Connecticut's always touted itself as, you know, the Gold Coast, you know, like a wealthy, you know, New England state. And, well, you're familiar with Greenwich, so you know what that's like. But I've always wanted to do a documentary on that and find the pockets of poverty in Connecticut. There's a lot of them, especially in Hartford, Connecticut, and New Haven, and Bridgeport, and other areas, major cities. But it's not talked about much on the news media here. It's not really been a major issue that's been a news issue, even in our legislature. And it's bringing that attention to this area, I think would be a very, very major accomplishment, I think, and if we would be able to speak to some of the people up here in a big gathering, we could, a COVID-safe outdoor gathering, I think it would be a remarkable thing. I think you'd probably raise a lot of money and a lot of interest. And
I'll look forward to your email.
And if you can tell me and the audience how do you become a member of your coalition? You know,
you could just go to our website at www.nationalhomeless.org, and there is a
national
page. National Homeless.
nationalhomeless.org. Okay.
Yes. And there's a drop down menu that will take you to membership, donations, whatever you'd like to do. That's right on our webpage.
Okay. Yeah, I'll go to that. nationalhomeless.org. Okay.
That's
and,
correct.
No, I think that I think that's an extremely noble cause, and something I've been an activist for many, many years. And you know, I'd like to, you know, contribute, but as a member, maybe, I don't know, organize more members or something, you know, whatever we can do for you.
We would love that.
No, I'd try. You know, I'd like to. We're trying. I guess the awareness of it is so. Everybody's afraid of it. The last thing anybody wants is to be homeless, and you know, whatever. And those who have been know the anguish, and just like yourself, and know the hardship that it causes. And people, especially with children, and you know, oh God, and they're all getting evicted now, and things like that. I just feel that there's a time to do something here, and not only with a stimulus, but you know, make an awareness. You know, just like the awareness of incredible racism that's going on in this country, or has been forever. But
right.
You know, now this with the Asian community, holy cow, you know. It's amazing. 3,800 violent actions attempts at in the last year. You know,
which is incredible.
Ever since Trump called it the Kung Fu, it became, you know, another crying point for white supremacists. You know? And
yes,
you know, anybody, you know, it's just amazing. But yeah, you know, racism is a whole other issue that I don't know.
Which
how
impacts homelessness as well. It definitely impacts homelessness as well, and the population of people that experience homelessness are disproportionately
right.
people of color. And if you
right.
equate it to policy to poverty, it isn't.
No.
It doesn't match up. So poverty is not the issue.
Well, you know, I think what bothered me most in the last few years was when the UN stated that parts of the United States are worse than third world countries, and that's some of the Indian reservations, as well as
yes.
Places in Alabama and places in Georgia and places in the Deep South, where poverty is unbelievable, and they cited this in their UN inspections. And of course, Trump wanted to get out of the UN after that. But you know, you know, it was really shocking. I was shocked when I heard that, because there hasn't been any real reporting on that issue, other than homelessness in California, which is pretty much the most obvious in the country, and the rest. What other pockets have you found of the vast amount of homelessness in this country?
Well, outdoor homelessness, California is often cited as kind of the epicenter, but New York has more homeless people per capita than California, but it's throughout the nation. It's every jurisdiction in the nation. It comes
yeah.
in different forms. You talked about Native American homelessness and the
mm-hmm.
poverty
yeah.
on the reservations. They were really hard hit by COVID.
Absolutely.
And then you have, you know, every rural pocket in the country. Washington, D.C., has a huge population of homeless people. And what we're seeing is more and more people are in tents. People used to be in shelters. For the first time, there's more homeless people in this country outside than we have inside. So there's less people in shelters than there are people living on the streets of the country.
So many people living in their cars, you know, living in tents,
yes.
And they're lucky if they have cars, but, you know, a lot of people are living in that way. And
big problem in our southern states.
In southern states, yeah.
So Florida has probably the largest population.
Really? Do they? Really? How about, like, Kentucky and West Virginia and those states, is there a lot of homelessness there? Is there,
yes.
is there that Appalachian area there?
Yes, Appalachia, they have, you know, their share of homelessness as well. Rural homelessness is a little different, but just as traumatic. And the other part about it in places like that, if it's not an urban community, the resources are less. So instead of, you know, several shelters in the community, there'll be one shelter for everybody.
Right.
And there's also, we did a webinar on rural homelessness last week, and what they talked about, the woman, her name's Barbara Anderson from Jefferson, public kind of backlash about helping homeless people, the extent where one of their programs was actually fire bombed by people who didn't want to see it in the community. So NIMBYism takes on a whole different form in those smaller communities.
As far as the the COVID concerns, was it West Virginia? I think it was West Virginia who was being applauded for their response to that. I guess they got vaccine buses. You know, they're buses that are going around the areas and vaccinating different rural parts. They were smart enough to get out in front of this thing, but so many other areas aren't doing that, and I was kind of surprised. Is that becoming more of the move now, or is money in the new stimulus bill to fund these kind of mobile units or what for vaccinations?
Yes, there's money for more vaccinations. There's a lot of thinking around innovative ways. The other thing they did in West Virginia that other communities are copying is that they use some of their independent local drugstores for vaccines.
Right.
And then they use other places like Dollar General, of all places, and Walmarts to vaccinate people. So the community, the country is becoming very creative about getting the shots in people's arms. And West Virginia, to their credit, had some of the early innovative thinking about it.
Hmm. Yeah, no, I was impressed. Connecticut was one of the, because we were next door to New York, we were getting an overflow of COVID cases. But they finally, between New York, Massachusetts, New Jersey, and Connecticut, those three started to stop people from going over the border. You know what I mean? Or at least tracking them, and a lot of people were becoming more. Some people were actually being turned away. I remember being turned away from New York border. You know. Excuse me. Yeah, the New York border. Said, you know, where are you coming from? I said, I'm coming from Connecticut. And they said, oh, well, which way did you come? I said, I came through Mass. They went, oh, you're okay, you can go through. But if I had come through Greenwich or come through through the southern part, they would have turned me away because that's where they have your the heavier number of contagions were. But it was kind of an odd thing, you know, but to be stopped at the border in a state border, but and turned away. But I guess they kind of stopped that now. I guess they're now And there are no, I don't know, there are no toll takers anymore either, you know, since
right.
COVID. All those people
yes.
out of jobs, you know. God almighty. Instead they, you know, but I guess I'd rather be out of a job than be, you know, come down with COVID. You know, it's probably that was kind of a job where you meet a lot of people every day, you know.
Exactly.
Yeah. But anyway. Is there anything I don't know if we talked about everything you wanted to talk about tonight, but is there anything else that you wanted to mention, or would you like to?
No, I just think, you know, thank you so much for the opportunity, and I hope to work with you down the line. It is a noble issue to work on. Yeah, please, anytime. Just let me know, and I'm happy to be on. Homelessness is a issue that affects our neighbors, our friends, sometimes our loved ones, and it's not an individual issue. It's a societal issue, and we need society to help
issue.
Us
yeah.
to address it.
How much of homelessness is caused by addiction and mental illness right now? I mean, and this, man, I don't remember a time when I've seen so many mass shootings in the last this year.
Yes.
It seems like every month.
So homelessness probably, I mean, as far as addictions, you know, it's hard to measure. And here's the reason why. You don't know whether the mental illness is a cause of homelessness or is it a result of homelessness. So the
right.
numbers are in the 30 to 40% range. I believe, you know, that's slightly higher, but not demonstrably higher than the general population. And so there is that substance abuse, but substance abuse itself won't make you homeless. What makes you homeless is not having housing. So, you know, we have a lot of people with substance abuse issues in boardrooms and CEO's chairs. So it is an issue. And certainly, you know, it is the reason why some people have, you know, lost their housing and not been able to maintain. So it is
right.
an issue that must be addressed. That's another good thing in the plan. You know, we've seen an explosion of opioid addiction the plan has dollars to address those issues. The Biden plan, the American Rescue Plan.
Yeah, no, we haven't seen anything like this since before we were born, which is when FDR did it in the 30s, you know, in the 40s, and they came out with a major plan. The last thing I wanted to ask, what do you think of the trends of this new infrastructure, $3 trillion infrastructure plan he's putting out? Does that encourage you, or I hopefully it won't be spent in the wrong ways, but I hope
it,
you know, it'd be nice.
It really encourages. I was going to say it really encourages me because I hear, I haven't seen the numbers yet, that there's a huge amount of housing in the infrastructure bill, and we've been saying for years that housing is infrastructure. But I think there's some opportunities that we're pursuing now. You know, if there's going to be massive construction projects and projects to rebuild a country, we want homeless people to get some of those jobs as well. So I'm encouraged that it's coming. I hope get through the Senate, but we'll see.
No, I think I think we got a good chance. You know, but
yes,
I don't know. We got a chance. As long as we can keep the Republicans' hands out of business, we'll be all right, I think. Do you feel that way?
The Republicans and the...
yeah, right.
We also have some quasi-Republicans. We also have those quasi-Republicans, Trump Democrats. We have.
Yeah, that's true. Now, I don't know. I'm hoping that by the end, by 2022, there won't be any of them left. But
yes, I am with you in that hope.
if all you get is Ted Cruz and Rubio and a couple of Bobos from, wherever running it for president, it'll be really, really interesting to see what the Republicans pull next in 2022 or 2024. You know,
exactly.
I'm hoping they lose everything in 2022, but that would be a progressive dream. But what can we tell you?
We just keep the hope alive, Jesse Jackson.
You keep
the
hope alive, yeah. Well, anyway, we're about the end of the show, but I wanted to thank you so much for being on, and I will send you the information on as I create this this possibility of a fundraiser for your organization, and it could be a very big thing in the in the summer here. You know, in June and July.
Thank you for considering us, and I look forward to
it. Yeah, we'd like to do that. Yeah, we really would, and do our best to see what we can do for you. Okay. So. I will be joining your coalition very soon. Hopefully tomorrow morning. All right.
Well, thank you so much. We really are very, very happy to have you.
Okay, I'd be happy to be with you guys. So have a wonderful evening. And again, for anybody who wants to reach you, you can go to nationalhomeless.org, right?
Yes, or you can just go directly to my email at dwhitehead@nationalhomeless.org.
Is it? I had DH Whitehead. Is it D Whitehead or DH Whitehead?
So the DH Whitehead is my personal email, my email at the organization is dwhitehead@nationalhomeless.org.
Oh, okay. At National. Well, I'll send that on to your personal email, the information, so I'll give you, would that be all right?
That's absolutely perfect.
That way you'll probably look at it more quickly and respond. And I know myself, I've got three different emails that are,
me too. I have three
email accounts, yeah. Thanks for being on. The time's up and we'll get going. But I want to thanks again and wish you the best of luck in your new job. And,
absolutely.
Thank you
so much for having me.
Well, it was great to do that. I usually don't spend a whole hour with people, but this was a good one. I appreciate it.
Thank you for the extra time.
No problem. Have a good night.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
You too. Take care. Bye.
Yep. Bye-bye. All right. And that is the end of our program tonight. I want to thank everybody for joining us, and we hope that you'll join us again. Again, please go to please check out nationalhomeless.org, their website, and donate or become a member. Homelessness is a major, major problem in this country and around the world, and it should be addressed. It should be confronted, and what more can I say? And I'm going to leave you tonight. And, by the way, check out my latest and greatest on the art and photography of L.A. Steel, lasteelshow.org. And check out my programs there, my both websites. And enjoy. So good night, everybody, and have a great evening. Let's see if I can. There we go.